Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer and a TV presenter and a gastronaut. This episode is one of our series of interviews with leading figures in the food sector, getting under the surface to discover what motivates and inspires them and looking at their work to see how it's shaping the future of food. Today's question is this: if we all ate seasonal food, what difference would that make to the food system and to the planet? In theory, only eating foods that are produced in your region at certain times of the year should mean fewer carbon emissions and less waste. But how big an impact would it have? And how likely is it that such a big change can be affected? And really, would it benefit everyone? My guest is the food entrepreneur, Emily van Popperinger, co-founder of Oddbox, a company that delivers thousands of boxes of in-season fruit and veg every week as part of its fight to make the world more sustainable. Oddbox has a beautifully clear and simple pitch: wonky fruit and veg, deliciously odd, and delivered to your door. It's that elegant solution to a complex problem that really intrigues me. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Stefan. Really glad to be on the podcast today.
Ah, it's really exciting. So let's before we delve into Oddbox, let's start talking about you. Now, you grew up in France. Tell us a little bit about the food culture around you as you were growing up.
Yeah, so obviously, as you can hear, I'm originally from France, and I actually grew up in the north of France. And my grandparents on both sides were potato farmers. Though I never worked on the farm, I heard a lot of stories from my dad. But never really worked on the farm, because by then, actually, they had sold the farm. And so my dad worked there every weekends, every holidays. So it was very much of a family affair at that time. And they eventually sold their land to another farmer, as none of their seven children wanted to continue working on the farm.
And that's a very much a sort of a traditional generational shift, isn't it? That the new generation is less keen on it. So did you never think about farming?
No, I never thought about farming. And all the stories I heard were that it was a lot of hard work.
Yeah, and it is, isn't it? It's a lot of hard work. Now, farming, well, and fast food are both contentious issues in both the UK and in France. And farmers, certainly in France, have a huge amount of power and sort of political power. Now, there's a lot of good talk in both the UK and in France about sustainability, but there's still huge-scale intensive farming, and certainly in the north of France, the size of those fields, they're just vast, aren't they? So is there a disconnect, do you think, between aspiration and reality in farming in France and in the UK?
Yes, there is definitely. And actually, the reason why there's intensive farming, the reason why farms are so big, is because all the smaller growers went into bankruptcy. And so, for example, with Oddbox, we at the very start, we work with a cucumber grower who had kind of slightly smallish greenhouse in the Lee Valley. And a year after we started working with him, he said that they had to close down because they were actually making losses months and months, and it just wasn't sustainable. And so that's the reality of small farming, that without automation, they are very reliant on seasonal labor, and seasonal labor is becoming more and more expensive and more difficult to find.
Certainly in the UK, it is after Brexit.
Yeah, and, okay, well, and let's actually, talk about just talking about seasonal labour, we work with a grower in the Midlands, and in the past, they used to get labour from Spain and Portugal. Then they moved to further East Europe and were getting labour from Ukraine. Now, actually, they have to charter planes from places like Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan, because they are not able to get labor from closer. And so during COVID, there was a big push to get kind of UK people into the fields. but that didn't work because it's just too much of hard work, and people are not really willing to work on the land.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a problem that is going to persist for a while yet, I believe. Now, OK, let's talk about Oddbox then. Now, Oddbox is a brilliant idea, but like many great ideas, it seems so obvious once you've actually launched it. So talk us through the origins of the company. What was the initial inspiration for you?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I grew up from a family of farmers, but actually never knew about the issue of waste until 7 years ago. And so I moved to the UK over 12 years ago. And when I came to the UK, I was quite amazed by the fact that I could get strawberries in winter, though that excitement quite quickly turned to disappointment, because strawberries in winter really don't taste that great.
They don't taste of anything,
do they? They don't taste of anything. They are imported from Spain or from North Africa. They've been picked and ripe, and they kind of lack that sweetness from ripening on the plant. And for me, we had strawberry plants in our garden. I knew what strawberries were supposed to taste like. And then fast forward 5 years later, until then, I didn't do anything about it. We went on holidays to Portugal. And again, there we would do our shopping at the local market. And we tasted some amazingly tasty and juicy tomatoes, which looked really ugly. And that kind of brought me back to thinking about that disappointing strawberry experience. And it kind of made me question why I just couldn't get such tasty tomatoes or strawberries in London. And that led us on a journey where we discovered that up to 40% of the produce we grow in the UK and worldwide is wasted even before it leaves the farm. And why is that? As you mentioned, because it doesn't look right, or quite often because there's too much which is grown, despite being perfectly good for human consumption. And so through doing that research, through learning about the problem, we kind of thought that something needed to be changed. And that's how Oddbox was born. So initially, it was very small scale, something that we started at the weekend with just a handful of customers in South London. And for us, actually, it was just the perfect opportunity to create value from what is an inefficient food supply chain. But it was also more than that, an opportunity actually to share the knowledge that we had gained, to tell the stories of all the things that we had learned from speaking to growers, and also actually help people like us who wanted to take a small and easy step towards a more sustainable lifestyle, knowing that even that small step could have quite a massive impact. And so it was very much our own eagerness to do something good and share that we had found an easy way to do something good.
And do you find that you tend to work with smaller growers naturally, or do you prefer to work with the smaller growers?
So at the start, we worked with smaller growers just because we didn't have the scale. What was difficult initially was working with growers and convince them that they should give us a chance. Because when we started, my background is not in food nor in agriculture, so I didn't know anything about the sector. I didn't know anything about fresh produce beyond eating fresh produce. And so when we contacted them, the volumes that we wanted were tiny. They didn't understand really the concept. They didn't think people would be willing to eat strange looking fruit and veg, and that people would want to choose exactly what they wanted. So they didn't really think the concept of Oddbox could work. And also, we thought they could send us boxes of apples, cucumbers, broccoli to our flat for us then to pack these into boxes to our customers. The way it works is that growers typically grow the produce, and then The people, the produce companies, will then manage the logistics. So we were supposed to then, initially we had to go to all the farms ourselves with our car and then with the van to go collect the produce and then put them into boxes.
Do you think that your lack of experience was actually an advantage? Because obviously you've dived into an industry that has ingrained ideas about what you can and can't do and what they think the consumer wants. Do you think it took somebody like you who, with, you know, I don't want to say this in a negative way, but with a level of ignorance, you could dive in there and say, no, forget all that. No, I'm a consumer. I know what I want. And that you can sort of set aside all of these traditional ingrained ideas and come at it fresh. Do you think that was an advantage? Or did it trip you up quite
no,
a lot?
I think it definitely was an advantage because we saw things a lot more simply than what they are. We didn't really think too much about food standards, about there were a lot of things that we didn't know and which probably if we had been in the industry would have been barriers for us to start or made us do things much slower, much more carefully. But typically, innovation, and you would see that in other sectors as well, that innovations come from the outside, from people who are not from the sector, and are able to think about the sector, how the sector operates in a different way.
Yeah, so I hate the word, but it's sort of disruptive for you to come in and go, well, I don't care about the things you normally care about. But okay, let's talk about the journey that Oddbox has been on. So you founded in 2016. You now have tens of thousands of customers. You did a crowdfunding exercise, didn't you? Can you tell us a little bit about that and whether or not that sort of set you free to be able to take your own path?
Yeah, so for us, our background was in the corporate sector. So we didn't have a background in entrepreneurship. We didn't know really much about how to start a business. And so we started it on the side. I was working full time when I started Oddbox. I started it initially on my own and then got my husband to start helping me a bit and a bit more. And finally now we're running Oddbox together. Our idea was very much of how you typically start and grow a business where you make a bit of money and you reinvest these funds into scaling the business. But after 2 years of doing that and growing really slowly, we thought there might be a better way of doing it. And that's when we decided to do crowdfunding. At that time, we were only servicing South London. We had a waiting list of 3,000 people in other parts of London and other parts of the UK who wanted to get an Oddbox, but we just didn't have the funds and the capacity to deliver to them. And so for us, crowdfunding was an amazing opportunity because it was actually bringing our community closer to the Oddbox mission and our community funding the Oddbox mission.
And has that liberated you, do you think? So you don't have traditional big investors that need to see a certain type of return. Has that been successful for you?
So so after the crowdfunding, we did more. We did further funding rounds from institutions. So we now have what you mentioned as people who have different expectations. However, there's different types of investors. But you're right in terms of the crowdfunding. It's a lot more flexible in terms of the expectation, in terms of timeline, in terms of level of return. And it's smaller investors who are very supportive and are there because they believe in what we do. And they expect a financial return, but they know that there's quite a high level of risk and uncertainty.
Yeah. Now, what lessons have you learned from? I guess it's interesting, really, that you've had both sides of that investment journey. So, and in terms of growing the company, what lessons have you learned? What surprised you? What mistakes did you make along the way that we could learn from?
So, in terms of investment, we probably should have raise some investment earlier because in the first 2 years we grew so slowly. There was a lot of things we had to do ourselves, which was inefficient. We tried, so our background was in finance. We tried doing a bit of marketing, failed quite badly, but not because marketing didn't work, but because we didn't know how to do it well. So there's value in actually being able to hire people who know how to do it. We could have expanded faster if we had raised earlier. So I think there's value in kind of thinking about different sources of investment. However, I would say as well, there's value in waiting a bit and bootstrapping, because that meant that we've been quite efficient in how we do everything from the start, because we just couldn't afford to do it any other way. And for example, we deliver overnight, and the reason why we deliver overnight is twofold. Partly it's because it's a lot faster and therefore cheaper to deliver overnight. So initially, we were using freelance drivers who were delivering for other logistics company and wanted to do a few more hours because they had a van and they had more time. They didn't get all the hours they needed from the other logistics company. So that was a good way to utilize their asset. And also overnight, it's a lot faster, there's less traffic, and therefore it's also better for the environment because the vans stop less. And similarly, we've always been quite targeted in terms of where we deliver, so we need to get a lot of density for our routes to be viable. And for us, it's about we deliver only one day a week in each area. People can't choose when they get their delivery, but that means that we have vans who do several deliveries in the same mm-hmm. street.
It makes a huge amount of sense now, but I guess it took a long time to get to that stage. Okay, let's talk about the subject at hand, which is seasonal eating. Now, to some extent, we all eat seasonally, I guess, stews in winter, salads in summer, things like that. But of course, we can go to the supermarket any time of year, get pretty much whatever we want, whether it's in season or not. We talked about strawberries earlier on. Now, is seasonal eating really important, or is it just one of the many cliches that celebrity chefs and writers spout, but just to sort of fit in with the zeitgeist and to sound a bit lovable? For you, presumably, it's pretty vital stuff, isn't it?
I guess, so obviously we all do it, more stews in winter, more salads in summer. However, we also all expect to be able to get broccoli all year round, and that relies on importing this produce because they are not grown in the UK all year round. We're also in a world where we want our groceries delivered in less than 10 minutes. And that's quite at odds with actually that concept of seasonal mm-hmm. eating. So for us, what we talk more about is about grower-led eating, is about more flexible eating. And so we don't talk too much about seasonality, and also seasonality is quite a tricky concept in a global world. And so what I assume you mean is locally seasonal, because in some ways you could say something is seasonal somewhere in the world. So for example, for grapes, they are seasonal in different places at different times. If we talk about locally seasonality, if you think about the fruits we eat, first of all, the UK is only self-reliant for 18% of the fruits we eat. And if you think about the kind of fruits which are grown in the UK, it's very few fruit varieties like apples, pears, berries, and plums. However, we import all our citrus, all our bananas, all our grapes. And even for the fruits that we grow in the UK, for example, the main crop is apples. Apples get harvested in September, October, and they are then stored for several months. So then there's a question of, would you rather eat UK stored apples in January or fresher apples shipped from New Zealand which have been harvested only a few weeks ago. So that's quite tricky to think about seasonality. And if you think about local as being the UK, then yes, there's a good amount of availability of vegetables, less of fruits. If you think about what's grown within, let's say, 30 miles from you, then there's very little because each region will be specialized in a type of crop. So in Lincolnshire, they grow lots of brassicas, so cabbages, broccoli, cauliflowers. In Kent, there's a lot of fruit, so a lot of apple are grown in Kent. So there's kind of that concept of local and seasonal is quite tricky. So what we're advocating for at Hotbox is actually that more flexible way of eating where we'll accept that there will be sometimes shortages and therefore we have to eat more of something else which is in surplus. So for example, right now and at Hotbox we always prioritize UK produce, and so at this time of the year there will be quite a lot of courgettes and lettuces in our boxes because that's what's available. There's flushes, especially because of the weather. There's flushes of specific crops, so we put more of these crops in our boxes because there's a lot of availability. And there will be things which won't be available at all right now. And so it's very much that flexible eating which matters to us, and which also, because Hotbox is all about tackling food waste, actually a lot of waste is created by the fact that we want everything available all the time, and therefore the way to tackle waste is to eat what's available, what's in surplus right now.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Because there's an obsession with food miles, but when you look at the macroeconomics and the CO2 equivalent emissions impact of food miles, the picture is much more complex. Back to the celebrity chefs and writers, throwing out the term food miles as a catch-all word for evil doesn't really add up. New Zealand apples at certain times of the year have lower CO2 emissions than stored apples that have been grown in Kent and chilled for several months, kind of thing. So do you find that frustrating that a lot of food writing and food culture in the UK is hidebound by the clichés that we find it hard to shake off?
I think it's just that the food system is so complex that typically we'll focus on a specific subject which is easier for people to understand. And obviously food miles is easier to understand than kind of thinking about the broader food system. And you're right, for example, eating UK grown tomatoes which have been grown in a glasshouse in the winter is a lot more carbon intensive than eating tomatoes grown in Spain where they've grown kind of outside. And because a glasshouse requires a lot of energy to operate. So sometimes for people it's easier to think, okay, I'm going to eat local because local is better, but then that blanket approach of thinking local is better is not necessarily true. So, but then because it's so complex, then people need to kind of think about easier way to make decisions. Mm.
So it sounds as though one of the really key things for you is flexibility. So to be able to shift the way that you eat. Now, another I think of the cliches about buying fruit and veg by the box is that in winter it's a box full of turnips, and these I've heard this said time and time again. How do we change that perception?
It's true that in winter there will be more root veg than what you have available in the supermarket because there's obviously more root veg available at that time. However, we make sure that there's never only turnips or potatoes in our boxes. But there will be more cabbages, there will be more More carrots, more potatoes, some kale. So in winter, people find that our boxes are a bit less exciting. I think the main reason why people don't necessarily enjoy a veg box is because they like to eat specific things every week. So typically people will buy peppers, will buy tomatoes, will buy broccoli, and these will not be available all the time. So it requires quite a change of mindset to embrace the veg box. But once people embrace that, they actually say it's quite amazing because especially when you have young children, you so you have your box waiting for you on your doorstep. You open your door in the morning, it's like Christmas every week. And then you open the box and you talk about the produce. You look at all the different things in the boxes. Sometimes you discover things that you've never eaten. So it challenges you in cooking. It makes it a bit more difficult than just redoing the same recipe every week.
Now, a lot of the thinking about cutting down on food costs again in the media at the moment has been that that planning is so important. You've got to plan. The more you plan before you buy, the less you'll waste. The more you plan before you cook, the more likely you are to eat everything that you've made. This is slightly at odds with your concept, isn't it? Which I would have said that what you really need is to understand food better, that you need to have food ingrained. And as you say, not to be phased when a box of slightly unfamiliar veg comes, but see that as an adventure or as an opportunity. But we're fighting human behaviour at some level, aren't we? Because a lot of people, when it comes to food, people are terrified. I mean, you can call it pathetic, but it's also just a real problem that people are scared of something they don't know. They're scared of waste, of making something that isn't nice enough. How do you get beyond that?
So for us, there's a lot. It's a lot about education, and and it needs to start with children, and that's why actually from the start, Oddbox is not just a box of surplus and odd fruit and veg. We're a way for people to learn about the food system, to be challenged, to experiment, and so we've got a letter in the box which explains where the produce comes from, why it's in the box. Give them tips and recipes on how to store, how to cook, how to preserve the produce, explain how it's been grown, some of the challenges that the growers have experienced, to create more of that connection with the food. I think what we've lost is that connection with the food, and actually during COVID, we kind of regained a bit of that connection and valuing the food that we eat. And so that's what we're trying to do. And it's true that kind of meal prepping helps with reducing waste, but being able to be innovative also helps with reducing waste. And so for us, we also help people know what can be stored, what can be frozen, what can be preserved, and the different ways to use the produce. So that, because obviously our aim is not to pass on the problem of waste from farm to people's home. So we want to make sure that we don't generate more waste in people's home by giving them things they don't know how to cook.
And just to go back to the macroeconomics of farming, which I know is not your core subject initially, but presumably it is now. Now, if we say that around 40% of all food is wasted before it leaves the farm gate, I mean, is that waste ingrained in the practices of farming? Does what you do mess with the general macroeconomics? Would you find that the huge producers prefer to keep it that way for some reason? Is there, or is does everyone benefit if you cut down that waste?
So the reason why there's so much waste are twofold. First, actually, we've created a food system which is standardized. So it's a lot easier to pack 5 apples of 200 grams into 1 kilo bag than packing different apples of different sizes or different weights. The cucumbers in supermarkets are always cling wrapped. The machine which wraps the cucumber only can take straight cucumbers. So all the curvy ones actually get rejected. So there's, and even in terms of logistics, to transport, it's a lot easier if everything is the same size, yeah, shape. Again, people shop with their eyes. So when they see something with skin, some small cosmetic damage, they won't necessarily choose that produce. So there's a part of the food system has been set up in this way. Also, in the supermarket, you want the shelves to be full all the time. And for the shelves to be full all the time, because as much as supermarkets are getting better at forecasting what people will want to buy, if it's warm, people want more salad items. If it's cold, people want more root veg. And it's difficult to predict, especially when there are some crops which are planted several months in advance. And so there's a continuous overproduction in the system. What we are doing at Hotbox is we actually offer, plug a gap in that system where, because we're flexible in terms of what we take, if there's a surplus of something, that's what we take. If there's a shortage in something else, then that won't be in our boxes. So in some ways, we offer a solution that overproduction problem, in that we absorb the surplus in the system.
And it's almost like there's a buffer that you offer.
Yeah, we see ourselves as actually kind of helping the growers, and so we're not competing with the retailer. We're actually offering a solution to a problem which they have created and which we have created as a society.
Yeah. Yeah, my mum used to say that cucumbers tasted better. The bendy they were, the tastier they are, which I firmly believe. Now, just one silly question, really. What is the most surprising wonkiness of the oddness of fruit and veg? I know that it's not all about oddness and it's not all about shape and things. But what's just for a bit of fun? What's the most surprising looking veg or fruit that crops up?
So the cucumbers are definitely quite often curvy. We have quite often funny looking aubergines. We also get conjoined kiwis. So what you see in the supermarkets are kind of round kiwis. The ones we get, when you cut them open, they look like a butterfly. So,
that's fantastic.
Yes. So there are things like that that actually, when you have young children, it's quite nice to open the box and to be able to connect your children with the food that they eat, to explain where the produce come from, why some of them are smaller, why some of them look different. So I think there's that joy of actually getting a box full of different type of produce, and full of produce which don't necessarily look all the same.
Mm. Although those carrots with the stupendous genitals, I think you'll just push them to the... We'll chuck them in a stew. Okay, now, last couple of questions really for you. There's so much going on in the world food system at the moment. There's a fuel price crisis, food prices are rising, the lack of workers on farms, issues with fertilizer supply, grain. Is there an opportunity here to change people's minds? It's a cruel question, really, but was COVID good for business? You know, are all of these things actually feeding into your business kind of ideal?
Yeah. So in terms of COVID, it was good for us because obviously we deliver food to people's home, and people move to a lot more of e-commerce online deliveries. So actually we saw a lot of people who kind of wondered whether Hotbox would work within their lifestyle and realize and made that step to try it out and realize that they quite liked getting that variety, that that excitement of different types of produce. We also actually saw that reconnection with food, and there was a survey which was done which stated that there was a reduction in the waste in people's home. So that's now gone back to the level it was pre-COVID, but because there were shortages on shelves, then people ended up wasting less of what they were buying. However, we think there's still a lot of opportunities. So we know that people are interested in food waste. We know that people are aware of the impact that it can have on their household finances. We also know that actually majority, so 81% of people agree that climate change is a global emergency issue. However, only 30% of people realize that food waste is what we call the invisible monster driving climate change. And food waste has a much bigger impact than plastic waste on climate change. So food waste has been stated as the number one addressable issue towards climate change. And so for us, we think there's a huge opportunity to increase the awareness of that link between food waste and climate change and get people to focus on that and take these small steps.
And the key word there really is the addressable. So, you know, it's a change that can be made pretty readily and easily. Really,
it's something that everybody can do something about. And that's the challenge with climate change, is that it's a big issue. And sometimes it feels like actually at an individual level, we can't do anything about it. But just to put it in context, it takes 300 liters of water to grow 1 kilo of potatoes. And 300 liters of water is the equivalent of 3 showers. So actually, when you waste 1 kilo of potatoes, you've wasted the equivalent of 3 showers, which is massive. So just making sure, and potatoes are not water intensive. Bananas, 1 kilo of bananas is 8 showers, and meat is thousands of showers. So, but what that says is that actually not wasting food is the first thing that anyone can do to address the climate crisis that we're facing.
Yeah, well said. Okay. So last question then, what's next for you and for Oddbox? What's on the horizon?
Yeah, so for us, our vision has always been that all food grown should be eaten. And actually, we produce enough for the worldwide population. We don't need to produce more than what we do right now. We just need to make sure that everything we produce is eaten. And so for us, our ambition is to build a really powerful community of people who believe in eating in that grower-led way, in a flexible way, which then drive overproduction and this unnecessary standards that we have of how the food should look like. So that together we can help tackle food waste and climate change.
Very good. We're very well put. Emily van Popperinger, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to the Food Matters Live podcast on your preferred platform. And if you feel inclined, why not leave us a review? Thank you so much for listening.